Davis Tsai.
Sven the Davis Tsai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Tsai Thursday Live.
Radio Tsai Thursday Live.
Dear listeners, Sairam from Ashantinilam.
In the beginning, of course, you know.
And welcome to another episode of A Matter of Conscience. I'm Team Radio Science Bishu. Today is February 4th, 2016. And just a few days ago, millions in India and elsewhere paid their tribute to one of the greatest apostles of peace, of truth and nonviolence of our times, Mahatma Gandhi. January 31st, 2016 marked the 68th anniversary of Gandhiji leaving the mortal coil. In fact, on the afternoon of January 30th, 1948, Bhagwan had gone to River Chitravati with a group of people and suddenly he returned to the mandir and bolted the door. After that, he came out intermittently but for only very brief periods, and he finally came out only after 7:30 p.m. and then spoke a few words. No one really understood what he was saying, but they could make out that he was referring to a great soul who has moved on. No one had any clue what had happened. It was not the days of telephones or even newspapers, forget mobiles. Prashanti was not even born. Puttaparthi was largely isolated from the world, and the only connect to the world was an occasional newspaper that came from Bukkapatnam. And only after a couple of days, one of the devotees read in the national newspaper, Hindu, that Mahatma Gandhi, the father of the nation, had been assassinated at about 5:30 p.m. on January 30th in New Delhi. And that is exactly that time when Bhagwan went into silence, went into his room and was locked up himself. He locked himself up in the room in the mandir. And after this he comes out and shares that a great soul has moved on. That is how great this soul is, this great son of Mother India. No wonder, even now hundreds and thousands are inspired by his life, by the ideals by which he stood with so much determination and passion. We generally do not read about such people who are walking on the path which Gandhiji exemplified. We don't read about them in mainstream media. They hardly ever occupy the newspaper headlines. But there are plenty of them. There are so many of them who have the courage to follow their heart and in the process transform 1,000 hearts. I remember reading about a person who is known as Armoor Gandhi. His actual name is Abul Hasan. He was born in Armoor town in the state of Telangana in 1942. And when he was 15 years, he read about Gandhiji and he instantly turned into a Gandhian. This was 1965. Interestingly, his late parents were also social workers. After completing his high school, Abul Hasan went to Mumbai to work as a mason and later moved to Muscat, where he spent 8 years as a construction worker and a mason. After this, he returned home with his savings, bought an auto rickshaw and started eking out his livelihood. But why is Abul Hasan called by everyone as Armoor Gandhi? It is because Abul drives the poor people, the pregnant women, patients and pensioners free of cost in his auto rickshaw. He buries and cremates forlorn bodies with his own expenses. He feeds at least 4 beggars at his home every day and as many as 20 needy people during Ramzan. Every year he extends financial assistance to about 10 poor students he gives them at least ₹1,000 each from his savings. He collects donated clothes and distributes them to the poor. He always keeps a petrol can in his auto and gives fuel to vehicle users free of cost in case their vehicle breaks down on the road. He keeps water cans in his auto during summer to provide drinking water to passers-by. If he comes across any pits or potholes on the road, he fills them with metal and soil and removes obscene posters and hoardings from walls. He goes to slums and teaches poor students. When people wonder how he is able to give so much of himself when he is just an auto rickshaw driver, he says, "I believe to serve people you need no position, no qualification. You don't need to be rich. What is needed is a kind heart." And when people ask him what his religion is, what are his beliefs, he says, "There are only two religions in the world, peace and love. And there are only two dharmas, two paths of righteous conduct, and they are goodness and humanity." Someone very beautifully said, "There is a lot of distance we have to cover from being a human being to being human." Often people push all their weaknesses under the rug, saying, "I'm a human. I mean, it is natural for me to get angry when confronted with such a situation. It is okay for me to compromise when faced with such a difficult situation in life. I'm not a god, I'm not a demigod, I'm not a saint, so it is fine if I get overtaken with little desire, with little greed, if I get attracted to something which is so tempting." But what we forget is anger, greed, jealousy, pride, desire, they are not human traits. They are not human values. We clearly know what are human values. Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa, Truth, Righteousness, Peace, Love, Non-Violence. Fortunately for us, there are scores of people in every city, every town, in every society. Whether they have heard of Bhagwan's teachings or not, they believe in these values. In some ways, Bhagwan's message has seeped into their hearts through some instrument, through some divine master, and they believe in truth, they believe in love, they believe in compassion, they believe in non-violence. And there are so many who do their own experiments in truth and love, just like Gandhiji did. And they are the ones who become the change that they want to see in the world. And today I wish to share with you one such story. It is truly divine design that I met Mr. Jayanta Kumar Sengupta a week ago. He is currently Chief Assistant Director, Community Education Division, Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. How he got into this position is pretty revealing. When I asked him to share his experiments with truth, he came out with amazing anecdotes of living by the voice of conscience. He worked in the corporate world for at least 7-8 years before destiny put him in the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. So I began by asking him how was the experience of putting his principles to real test, real action, in this mad world of business and profit making during his corporate years.
Well, in the beginning, of course, you know, once you get a job, things go on very happy in the beginning because you have something called a pay, something that can, you know, make you move in different areas. You can have access to many things. As what Swami has always said, you know, most of the things are materialistic. So that materialistic joy comes in the front of things more often than not. And how we should move away from that materialistic happiness but go on to see the real happiness that Swami always tells us to look out for, to be in search of, and to find that real happiness. So of course, in the beginning, it was always just looking for a job, and once obtaining the job, and then, yeah, you go on. But at that point of time, every time the alarm bell, or as they say in the corporate world, red flag, you know, the red flag that always comes up and reminds us, is always, and especially some person like me, gone through the Balvikas education system in Malaysia, and I found how very important it is, and to see, and always, not only at that point of time, it was not so much about how important it is, but the most important thing was, how can I put into practice what Swami has taught? That was the main, you can say, life's adventure at that point of time. Yeah, we learn so much, we hear so much, but how can we use it? That is more important. So of course, in the corporate world, then the challenges, you know, it was all very nice and daisy at that point of time. And I always remember this one tagline that kept in my mind all the time. And it was, number one, it was love for God. Loving God. Loving God was a book that I read the first time. I still remember the first time I came here in Puttaparthi in 1983. It was the sandy days. Wonderful sandy days.
Yes.
With Sai Geeta, you know, coming and greeting Swami every morning. And I still remember I purchased this book. My mother had given me some little money to say that, you know, okay, go and buy something that you like. And I remember one of those things that I purchased at that time was the book titled Loving God by Professor Kasturi. And during one of those darshans, I had the blessing that Swami had autographed that book.
Oh, wow.
And I still have that copy. It's really precious. I've locked it in a bag. It's not even in a shelf. It's locked up in a bag. And every time when I look at it, that becomes the insurance of life. It gives me that confidence. Because loving God is one. And the next one, which was follow the Master. And to follow Him always, and He will guide you. So, during the corporate world, of course, as they say, things are rosy when everything is rosy. But when challenges come forth, what do we do? What can we do? What is the thing that we can use to let ourselves be free from that struggle, from that danger that can probably destroy us individually, or even go on to destroy our surroundings?
Pressures, temptations.
Temptations, and so on and so forth. Of course, at that time, you know, you hear very casually things like, there's always the easy way out. And I used to ignore all these things. I know it cannot be. You know, when you have things like policies, procedures, rules and regulations, I'm sure people don't go beyond that. You know, that was my belief at that time. So, the great challenge came one day when I was faced with very challenging situation, which sort of, in a way, was pushing me towards an area of not being able to practice integrity or human values, you know, the human values that we learn. Now, the situation was one day I was in charge of organizing events in this particular company. And when we deal with international, so one of the things was dealing with international events.
So you are basically an event manager sort of position?
Yes, you can call it event management, but looking at the broader aspect, it's part of marketing.
Part of marketing. So what sort of a company was this?
It was a media company that one of it, they would organize domestic events as well as international events. And it was one of those events that I was handling, which required, and normally in Malaysia, the procedures that follow suit before an event can be publicized or even advertised, for example, like sales of tickets and so on and so forth, we need to go through a series of applications. And these applications go to various government agencies and ministries. So as we know, you know, in many countries, some of these legal procedures or official or formal procedures do take some time. So there was this instance where one particular event where the timeline between the kickoff date as well as the day when the program starts, which includes sales of tickets and so on and so forth, is a short time frame. And these applications where it was dealing with, for example, like, you know, police permits, immigration, you know, dealing with applications that are normally not that easy because you're dealing with crucial departments, crucial agencies. So it was in one of those instances where I was looking after the whole event. So I was head of this project. And so I had filed in the applications for all these permits and approvals. And as time would take under normal circumstances, this particular time frame was eating up into our project timeline.
So you were trying to get all the papers in order to get these artists.
Exactly.
A couple of artists.
Yes. So as time started expanding in the application period, time started shrinking for the time to advertise, promote.
Okay, yeah, once you've got those passes and papers in place, then you can... Only then you can start selling tickets and you publicize the event.
Yes, yes.
So you need good time for this.
Good time for this. Mm. And it normally takes, you know, considerable time.
Mm.
And normally, you know, you just can't push your way through. Of course, under normal circumstances, you can't push
in getting all these permissions from various departments, you cannot push your way through. Yeah.
But of course, there's always one particular way, and I think it's common in many countries, many people experience it, where there's the fast way, or the shortest way, or the shortcut, as they say. And many a times, this particular shortcut leads towards some form of an act of corruption, or things that would go against a particular policy, procedure, rules, regulations. So it would go away from the normal tone of things. This particular instance where it was slowly, time was being crunched, and I was put in a situation where I was requested by my bosses to expedite this whole thing. And the fastest way, they had come to a point where they instructed me to use the odd way out, which was to say that at that point of time, the common word in the corporate world that they use is entertain. You know, go ahead and entertain your client. Do whatever it takes.
In all these departments, whatever it takes.
Yeah. So if there's a particular approval officer would be happy to receive a gift or even to be taken out for a lavish dinner or something like that, then do so. So that was the instruction.
So do whatever it takes.
Yeah, do whatever it takes. As long as we get the approvals immediately so that we can start our promotions and get our event up with the publicity in the nearest time. So when that was posed, immediately the red flag, you know, which was my own personal self-belief, that red flag, my conscience started pricking. And of course, immediately the first thing that I saw in my mind was Swami. And it was always because follow the Master and because loving God, loving Him and not to disappoint Him. So the question that came into my mind was, Swami, I know this is not right. What I'm hearing is against what you have taught me. I don't feel comfortable at all. Now, how do I go about doing this?
So there was a lot of pressure on you to go this way from your boss?
Yes, because it was an instruction, not an option. So at least if it's an option, then you know you have some time frame. But this was an instruction. So I went on...
Everyone was getting impatient, basically.
They were getting impatient, and I was in a... almost like in a tussle, you know, a bit of an argument with my boss saying that, in fact, I came to a point where I read those lines quite clearly and I questioned my boss and asked, are you trying to tell me to bribe officers just to get through, to get approvals out? And is that what you mean by do whatever it takes? So not clearly, but yet quite definitely say, Yeah, something like that, you know, just do whatever it takes.
They don't want to say that you do it, but, you know, we don't know what you do, but just get it done.
Exactly, you know, I'm sure they are not going to say, no, please go ahead and bribe, you know, do this, do that, You know, the word entertain and do whatever it takes, you know, just to be, how they say, you know, politically correct.
Correct.
So that was the case. I said, no, I'm not going to do this. If that's what you're asking
but
me
you
to
are
do.
Amazing. I mean, you just asked to point blank, are you asking me to
Because
bribe?
At that time, it was very clear in my mind, as if like Swami is flashing the card and saying, hey, this is what they're asking you to do. And I said, no way. No way I'm going to do this. Because I know for a fact, if I do this, not only I'm going to disappoint myself, but more importantly, I'm going to disappoint Swami, and I'm going to disappoint my parents. Because not only the teachings of Swami that has instilled this strength in me, but also the fact that contribution by my parents, how they brought me up. My late father was in the Air Force, and being a serviceman, discipline is like the main thing.
Yes.
And it was so aligned from childhood itself, you know, as I grew up, that element of discipline was so strong in the home that when I came under Swami's fold and started seeing that it's the same tight discipline, and I never felt alienated from that. It was something, now it makes sense. Why my father is so strict and instilling discipline at the highest, you know. So I say, yeah, it makes sense now, you know, because I don't feel like an alien when the kind of discipline that Swami sets in the organization and expects of everyone.
So it was easy for you, it was seamless for you.
Seamless, yes.
When you came to the higher organization.
I never felt alienated, yes. As they say. So when that happened, I was bent on my principles, guided by Swami. And I said, no, I'm not going to do this. And please express this to the top management that I will not take this path. And then, of course, you know, it went on, oh no, you know, you better, otherwise, are you trying to tell me that if I don't do this, that my job is at jeopardy? No, but yet again, trying to be politically correct, I said, no, look here, I'm not afraid. Two choices here. I pose two options here. Number one, please do convey my message to the bosses that I will not tread this path and I will not take up this instruction. No way. And if the effect is going to mean that, you know, my job will be in jeopardy and whatnot, I'm prepared to issue you my resignation letter immediately and I will not participate any further. Or please take this file and pass it on to somebody else because I'm not going to do it.
I mean, you were ready to walk away.
Yeah, without any fear.
Did you have a job in hand?
No.
But whatever it is, you don't want to do this.
No. Because at that point of time also, that message of Swami comes in. Why fear when I am here?
Yes.
And again, it goes back to follow the master. So follow the master means follow his teachings. And when the message comes, why fear when I am here? Then I tell myself, almost telling my boss, I don't have fear when he is here. So it doesn't matter. Today, as they say, nobody is indispensable. Likewise, no organization or job is also indispensable. It's how you move around, and there are many options out there. So I was not afraid at that point of time because I knew that my boss is a different boss. My boss is not those boss with, you know, titles of managing director, group CEO, chairman and board member. No. Mine was just plainly the Lord of the Universe, Bhagavan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. And I had total faith in Swami. I knew that Swami would guide me. And if I surrender myself to him, that he will give me what is right at the right time, at the right moment. And as I did this, you know, this tussle that was going on, then I said, please, you do one thing. I'm prepared to go and speak to the officers and make an appeal, heart to heart. Try, you know, Swami always
said, to all these department officers.
Yes. Mm. And explain to them the real situation. Why am I making an urgent appeal? And they are all human beings. If they feel like how I'm feeling and how you are feeling, I'm sure they would pick up our files and expedite it. And we will get the approvals immediately, the clean way.
You're willing to do anything in the clean way?
In the clean way.
Go to the departments two times, three times.
Exactly. I used to do that. And in fact, some of those officers like, hey, I just told you the other day we are going to take some time. Why are you coming back again? So I have to go, you know, sometimes, you know, you be a bit of, you know, thick skin, show a bit of sadness and say, look here guys, I don't own the company, but, you know, whatever it is, please help me out if it's possible. Right? After all, my papers are in order and we are a large organization. You guys know this organization. So I don't think so it's a problem of, you know, being familiar like of what we do. So just a small appeal, you know, just this one time.
Try through love.
Human interaction.
Yes.
One human to another human.
Yes.
You know, after all, that person is a human, not an animal. Mm. Yeah, if the other person at the other end was a lion or a tiger or a snake, then, you know, I would have a tough time. But since I was looking at a human being,
yes,
why not communicate
in believe in the goodness of the other person.
Exactly. And see whether I can somehow change this person's mind and, you know, decision and try to help out. But the clean way all the time. So I told my boss, this is what I'm prepared to do. If I have to go there 5 times, I'll do it. But at the same time, you please go and convey to the boss that this is what I'm going to do. And anything out of this, I'm sorry. Either you pull me away, or if you think that I should not be in this organization, fine, no problem. I'll do whatever that it takes. But I will not go against my principles. So that was a strong message that I sent. And at the end of the day, it worked.
It worked?
Yeah.
Obviously, worked. But how did it happen? How did the bosses take?
Well, in fact, I threw a challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. I was just a mere executive, not a famous, you know, in the top management. Or something. And I told my boss, you please tell the top manager, tell that it came from me. Me meaning, please mention my name and say that, because why I wanted to do that.
Say that this guy is adamant.
Yes. This name that you have in this organization will not bend on such things. He has no fear. Because simple as, he's backed up by the battery.
When it comes to these things, Jayant doesn't compromise. That's
no,
it.
I will not compromise. Can be anything, anybody, anywhere. Sometimes when I talk to my friends, he said, oh, so you're not afraid, huh? So it can be anything, anybody, anyone. I say, yeah. So if let's say Swami does it to you, what will you do? I say, I'll question Swami. Because I love Swami so much, if it happens, I will question Swami. I'll tell Swami, no Swami, this is not the way. I don't want to do it. And why not? Because Swami has said many times, hey, don't simply blindly follow me.
Yes.
Think. Think. Keep thinking. Why am I telling you this? Think not for me, but think so that you are clear about what you're going to do next.
Be clear.
Be clear.
And the rest will follow.
And the rest will follow. So all these little messages that I heard through the Swami's discourses or read in Sanatana Sarathi or some other leaders talking about all this. So these little ones always kept in my memory bank.
Somehow they get parked somewhere in your
they
mind.
They get parked. You know, they are put in a closet, in a special closet. It's called the values closet to solve life's mystery and problems. So when those things happen and, you know, of course, through patience, so things worked out.
So the permissions came.
So just within just a couple of days after that, I went, so even then, so I've gone again and this officer looks at me. You have come. Thank you for bugging us so much. Now, here's your approval. I said, you know, sorry for doing this, you know, again. I'm really sorry, but I really appreciate what y'all have done. You know, thank you so much. It means a lot. Be rest assured, this is not going to repeat again. You know, the next time it's going to come way in advance, according to the timeline that y'all have specified. So, please be assured. Otherwise, you'll not see my face. Because I'll probably not take up another project that maybe requires me to
push things and
do things like that. So we got it, and in fact, the company went into great profits out of that event.
So your shortened time for publicity and advertisement did not really cause that event incur any losses or something?
No. In fact, we had to organize additional shows.
Oh, it was such a success.
Yeah, because the demand was so much.
Oh, what was the event like?
It was actually an exhibition of performance of Shaolin exponents.
Martial arts. Basically.
Martial arts.
And how many artists were there?
That was easily about 50 of them.
50 artists.
50 artists. You know, so we did it.
I mean, getting papers of all of them done is quite an effort.
Yeah.
Getting permissions.
It's a huge, thick file. You know, it's about 3 inches thick. You know, all the papers and all that. You know, you have to go through all the nitty-gritty.
At least 4 or 5 departments. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So it was a success. Wonderful.
Yeah. It paid off, you know. And after doing that, the thing is, you feel so, like it says in spirituality, Swami says, at the end of the day is, you know, it's not the freedom of independence, like what we hear, you know, which is on a nationalistic term, you know.
It's not that political.
Not that political independence, but that independence of your thoughts and emotions and feelings where, you know, you feel so free that you can go around, you know, feeling so wonderful, so light.
Light, absolutely.
There's no burden. You don't have a big monkey on your back, so to say.
You sleep very peacefully and you can smile heartily.
Exactly.
Fearlessly.
Fearlessly
meet anyone.
In fact, you can automatically smile.
Yes, automatically smile. Wow. And that is a real freedom, right? The freedom of the spirit.
Exactly.
The Swarajya that Swami talks about.
Yeah.
Where it is the freedom of the soul. Because that is an experience which is incomparable to your freedom to go and watch two movies or three movies. You know, that's what we generally term as freedom.
Exactly.
We want that freedom of who is there to curtail my freedom and say that I can watch only one movie or I cannot eat this or I cannot eat that. But, you know, we term our freedom in terms of these little things related to the body.
Exactly.
But here Bhagwan was always talking about that freedom that you get from experiencing the joy of living the life according to the spirit.
Yes, Bishu, not only that, but it goes on to that freedom actually. See, one F is on getting freedom. The other F is moving away from fear.
Absolutely.
Because once you have freedom, there's no fear.
There's no fear.
You're so free to move around, you know, and do things without having to worry about somebody looking upon you, you know, are you trying to hide or, you know, protect yourself from something? No.
Yeah.
You don't need protection because freedom and having no fear itself is a protection.
Absolutely. F-E-A-R, someone said, face everything and just rise again.
That's the, true.
You can always rise, you know, there could be all the small, in fact, after you go through a couple of them, you don't even think after that, whether I should, what path I should take. I don't think you even spare a thought, you just decide, it comes naturally that this is what I do in life, that's it.
Yeah, because of that, my nephew, he's 11 years old, I tell him the same thing. I say, look here, I teach him, you know, something very basic. I say, you know, do first things first. So at home, I've got a small whiteboard since he was 5-6 years old. I said, okay, these are basic things you have to do. First things first. Wake up, brush your teeth, have your bath, have your breakfast, you know, enjoy your meal, and then you're free to do everything else. So I always tell him, you see, you will do the right things. If you do what you're supposed to do, nobody is going to come nagging behind you.
Yes.
Nobody is going to have the element of scolding.
Yes.
That you will experience. Nothing. Nobody can touch you.
You can be fearless anywhere, anytime.
Yes. Provided you do what you're supposed to do and you do the right thing.
Yes.
So doing the right thing, I guess that is what is character all about, isn't it? The great American author, political activist, lecturer, who was the first deaf-blind person to earn a Bachelor's of Arts degree, Helen Keller, she said, character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experiences of trial and suffering, only through these challenges and putting ourselves through these challenges, can we strengthen our soul, can we clear our vision, can we inspire our ambition and then achieve success. Doing the right thing with confidence and faith only fortifies our faith and strengthens our confidence along the right direction to do the right things again and again, with more patience, with more perseverance, with more purity. In a discourse way back in 1962, Swami said, human nature has to be controlled, it has to be guided along certain channels. River Ganga is pious, it is life-giving and harmless, but when it is flooded, when it is not controlled, it can bring disaster to millions. That is why Swami said the haste to secure an immediate advantage has to be cured. One must understand that the advantage one might get later with more patience and integrity is more lasting and more healthy. One has to forego benefits to oneself in favor of benefits to the group, to the village, the community, the country, to the whole of mankind. And then Bhagwan went on to share how to practice dharma. And Swami said, ideals, principles, laws, customs, codes, habits, actions, all these have to be judged on the twin points of intention and consequence. So the question to be asked before undertaking any action is the intention pure? Is it born out of love? Is it based on truth? Will it result in peace? If it is yes, Swami said, then dharma is there. Dharma is enshrined in that action, in that law, in that custom, in that conduct. Intention and consequence, these are the two bonds that guide the flood waters of the river safely into the sea. Bhagwan further explained that if the rules and restrictions are not there, then there will be no charm to the game of life. Just like in the game of football, if any player can do anything with the ball and there is neither foul or out, neither offside nor goal, neither throw or penalty, then it's going to be a meaningless game. It cannot give joy to anyone. That is why these rules and restrictions are so important. And then Bhagwan gave more clues to decide how, in a particular case, whether an act is dharmic or not. The first principle, Swami said, is that which does not inflict pain on you and on others. That is dharma. So you should act in such a way that you get joy and others also get only joy. Second principle, alternate principle, Swami said, is make your thought, word and deed agree in harmony. That is, act as you speak and speak as you feel. Do not play false to your own conscience. Do not cover your thoughts in a cloak of falsehood. Do not suppress your conscience by forcibly enslaving it and embarking on actions not approved by it. Then it is not dharma. Dharma is harmony of thought, word and deed. There should not be any hypocrisy anywhere. And Swami says, frequently doing the right thing makes it easier and easier. And that is what we saw with Jayant, isn't it? Bhagwan says, what you do depends on what you are. And what you are depends on what you do. The two are interdependent. And besides these two principles, Bhagwan gave another principle to follow. Swami says, dharma trains you to be calm, to be level-headed, to be secure in equanimity. You know the transitory nature of success or failure, riches and poverty, grief or joy, appointment and disappointment. So you are not elated or deflated. You are serene, you are unmoved. Anything that helps you to maintain this unruffled stability is dharma. Maintaining this unruffled stability is what is devotion, isn't it? That is the definition of a devotee Lord Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is exactly what Bhagwan wrote in the letter to his brother in 1947. My devotee is one who is always in a state of equanimity. So anything that helps one to maintain this equanimity is dharma. Anything that helps you to be a true devotee is dharma. Finally, Bhagwan said, to cut it short, sensual life is adharma. Spiritual life is dharma. Dharma is that which sustains, which saves, and which sanctifies. So these are some of the beautiful guidelines by Bhagwan. And as we saw, Mr. Jayant Sengupta was able to practice them to a great extent. Just take that first principle, that which does not inflict pain on you and on others. That is dharma. And Jayanta knew that if he took to the path of giving bribes, he will hurt himself. He is not going to be in peace. He is going to subdue his inner voice and that will disturb his equanimity. It is not dharma. And he had the courage to follow it. And I feel that is the key. He had that passion to walk this path. So I asked him next, what made him what he is today? what prepared him to be and behave in that manner when confronted with such a tricky situation.
But Jayant, it definitely needs a lot of courage at that point in time, you know, to say that this is what I will do, because, you know, there will be so many situations like that in corporate life where it is easy to say that it is my way, that's it. You know, this is what I believe in. But I think there will be many occasions where people might find it very difficult to take that path because, you know, they might think, what is going to happen if I lose my job? I mean, there's a family, there is all the responsibilities, you know, I cannot be so, quote-unquote, irresponsible to just think about only my principles and, you know, forget about everything else. So, what I'm trying to say is, it needs a lot of courage.
Yes.
To take that stand. Can I ask you, what prepared you until then to be so determined and, you know, to have that much of faith in your wings to happily fly even if you don't know where you're going to land next, and if you have a shelter, another tree to go and happily make your own nest, you didn't know, but you know, you somehow, you had so much confidence in your wings. How did that courage come? You know, what in your life prepared you for that moment?
Well, actually, it all started as I started Bal Vikas.
Mm-hmm.
And being exposed to Swami's teachings and the wonderful Bal Vikas teachers that I had
in Malaysia,
who had guided all the Bal Vikas children at that time, and the kind of discipline that they set, that element of why fear when I am here, and that kept me going. At that time, yes, probably it's just a mere song or part of a lyrics or just something that Swami always used in his discourses. But later on in my life, I saw how it was connecting. The dots were being connected and how important that particular element or particular aspect of Swami's teachings, while it sounds so simple, but it has a great impact.
Life-defining impact.
Life-changing. Oh, yes.
Impact.
Oh, yes. Definitely. It was from Bal Vikas itself. And like I said, the very first time I laid my eyes on Swami, when my mother introduced me to Swami, because our family was introduced by another family who are staunch Swami's followers. From then on, it's like great bond, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like, wow, I found a great friend.
You felt like that?
Yeah. And I said, oh.
What happened that you saw Swami and you felt you found your friend? Did he talk to you? Did he come near you? What happened?
It's very interesting. When I was a little boy, maybe 5-6 years old, I still remember that I used to play with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that, yeah, it sounds funny now. It's not like you can see him, but if people were to see me at that time, they say, this guy is hysterical. Or, this guy has gone nuts. Because suddenly I would just go and do things and I can remember the scenario. I was visiting my grandparents in Calcutta, and suddenly I would get up and look under the bed, behind cupboards, open a cassette player, and my mother would come and say, hey, what are you doing? I said, no, I'm looking for Swami.
Oh my God.
He's playing hide and seek. I need to find him. And suddenly when you feel that you found him, that happiness, you know, I found my friend. I found my great friend.
What did he make you feel that you found him?
Interesting. It's very difficult to explain in words, you know, Bishu.
Mm.
Because that feeling is so intense and so patched to your heart.
Mm.
That I think it's very difficult to explain in words.
So you should look for him and you should find him also.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that love grew and, you know, when I first set sight in seeing Swami
and
here.
And it was all because right from the time you were born, your parents told you that he's God.
Yes. I used to follow my mother for bhajans.
Mm.
And she used to take me all over the place, wherever there were bhajans, you know, I would go, I follow her and listen. And other than falling in love with Swami, his form, and the next thing that, you know, I fell in love immediately were bhajans.
Mm.
So, in fact, until now, you know, people back home, times say, this guy is a bhajan freak. But it's okay, because there's so much of joy
in
bhajans. Not only joy, but there's also so much of teachings.
Yes.
out of bhajans. They are just not merely songs or tunes to be there. It's not just a mere activity, but it's something more. It's a training. It's some form of tool that Swami has introduced to all of us, wherever we are. It's a tool that can guide us to a particular destination.
Yes.
So many other destinations, so many other tools. That's the best part of a spiritual master. He always comes and never forces anyone to do anything. He only guides and keeps guiding and advising. So the choice is up to us. How do we want to achieve that, or when do we want to use it? But my main source of inspiration or strength was the message on follow the master.
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved him so much, I never wanted to disappoint him. I'll just share a very simple thing, how it led me into my schooling days.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment in my life where, like they say, going back to a conversation I heard of one of the senior students on Radio Sai, an interview, and this brother was sharing a story about how Swami taught him about the process of cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
When he was on duty, looking after Swami in Swami's house, and he was on kitchen duty, and he was cleaning this particular cup that had a lot of sediments and residues from, you know, the curry or rasam or whatever. And as he was trying to clean it, he was having a tough time. And how he explains that Swami slowly comes in and asks him, "What are you doing?" "Oh no, Swami, I'm trying to clean this cup." "Huh? What is there in the cup?" "Some dirt, you know, I need to make the cup cleaner. So these things are dirt. So what are you doing?" "Pouring water." "Huh? So you know how to clean this?" "Yeah, Swami, just pour water." No. "Keep pouring more water." Swami keeps saying, "You see, the more good you put inside something that is bad, naturally the bad will come out. Which means, in the process of cleansing yourself, you will still experience some particles or some elements of negativity that you have. But that experience is not something that will stay, but it's an experience that is passing away. It is moving out. So it's like in air travel you have a transit.
Yes.
So it is transiting. So whatever it is, whether you like it or not, you'll have to experience it. But whether you choose to absorb it or you choose to just see it and let it pass through. So it may affect you, it may not affect you, but that's the process of cleansing. Don't get disheartened. So the idea is to keep pouring more goodness. So the water, the clear water, was signifying cleanliness or goodness or good values, positive values. So the more you add goodness, slowly, sooner or later, you'll get a cup of clean.
If something unpleasant happens, something unpleasant erupts, just know that they are on their way out.
They are on their way out. Provided that is what you want.
If you hold on to them, then you are keeping the dirt inside.
Exactly. Yeah. And what will happen is the clean water will get out, you know. In return, positive values will go out. And what will remain is, you know, still darkness and negativity. So this instance where I had a short span of, you know, like they say, you know, peer pressure and so on. You go into secondary school, it's a new experience, you know, you start...
Big boy now.
Big boy, you know, kind of thing. A bit of macho-ness comes in. You pick up a lot of things from the elder boys and you think, oh, it's cool. One of those things that I had, a dark spot at that time, was in my speech, in my communication. There were very frequently would use the usage of vulgar words.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use it freely. One day what happened was very interesting. It was a particular period of the class where the teacher was absent, and so we had a free period. And free period being, you know, boys at that age, I still remember I was 16 years old, you know, sweet 16, so to say, you know. And in school, in Malaysia, at the age of 16, you go into the higher secondary level. For example, it's like what you complete here in class 10, you finish class 10 and you go on to the higher level.
Yes, yeah.
So it's like that. So in Malaysia, is you go through an examination in class 9,
okay,
which is equivalent to the class 10 in India. So 16, so that is what they call honeymoon year. Mm-hmm. So it's known as Form 4, you know, it's Form 4. And generally Form 4 in the Malaysian education system, everybody says, oh, now you are in a honeymoon year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we all being in a honeymoon year, you know, every free period is like, wow, great freedom. Do whatever you like. And I still remember this day, it's still very vivid in my mind. I still can remember the image of the classroom, who was there, exactly where I was sitting. I was sitting at the back of the classroom. Everybody was doing their own things, you know, a lot of noise, a lot of movements, activities. I was just sitting down and rocking on my chair. I guess my mind started rocking as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this voice that was beginning to communicate with me. And to me, I knew it was Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, Swami like strikes a conversation. Very friendly, casual kind of thing. Not like, hey, come here. Mm-hmm. No. Very, you know, it's less like if a friend pops up and comes to you. Hey, Bishu, you know, how's things? That kind of conversation, that mode. And what he shared with me was, hey, do you know that the English language has so many beautiful words? And Swami emphasized on beautiful words. And I was like rocking in my chair. Oh, beautiful words. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Swami. Yeah. Huh. Why don't you use it? See, beautiful words will give beautiful experience. Beautiful experience, who will experience? You will experience. You will feel happy. You will feel so nice. Other people listening to you will feel happy. They will feel nice. They will come to you. They will smile. You will see more smiles. Do you want that happiness? Why are you using those words? You see, when you use those words, do you see anybody smiling at you? Do you see anybody coming close to you? Do you want friends? Or do you want people to move away from you? These were the reflection questions that Swami posed in my mind. And immediately, I stopped. I stopped rocking and I was like, in a daze for a moment. Is it real what I'm hearing? It makes great sense. But is it real? I thought, no, forget about real. What I've heard is real. Forget about where it came from. But whatever has been said, or whatever I'm hearing in my conscious mind, is very real, very true. And at that point, back again, coming back to that anchor of follow the Master and loving God. And at that moment, I immediately told myself, if this is what Swami wants, which is very true. Every time I use these words, you know, people, expression is of disgust. You know, they're hearing something which is not popular, not nice, anything, what kind. And I was thinking, my God, if this is what they feel about me, what if they come to know that I'm a Balvika student and I pray to Swami, and more than that, my parents are people of very high integrity. And I learned a lot of these values from my parents. Today they are not there with me. They are with Swami. But it is because of what they laid, the foundation that they laid in the home, that enabled me to capture that message of Sai very quickly. Not being alienated or confused or, you know, still trying to analyze. Because I was already living in it. But when Swami came, Swami enhanced that understanding. Enhance that importance, you know, and to say that, look here, I've sent these people to you, these two individuals who are known to you as your father and mother, they are from me, and they are here to guide you, and now you have come to me, I will guide you, so follow me, and because I love him, and at that, when all those reflections started coming in, those formulas started coming in, you say, if they know this, then they will blame Swami. They will talk bad about my parents. Oh, I can't let that happen. I can't disappoint Swami. I can't disappoint my parents. What if it comes to their ears? I don't mind somebody telling me I'm useless. But if somebody comes and tells me that, what kind of Swami's boy are you? Is this what Sai Baba is teaching you? Is this what your parents are teaching you? Now that's going to hurt me. And Swami always says, help ever, hurt never.
That's very difficult to digest if someone says that, you know, if because of you, your parents not get a good name.
Yes, that becomes very hurting. When that reflection started coming in, I said, no, this is, well, I can't let that happen. So because I can't let that happen, so I decided at that moment, from now on, I will stop using such language and follow the Master. Use beautiful words. Until today, I hope Swami is proud of that particular action that I took. Because once again, you know, Swami has told students also, and I heard this, Swami also said, don't make me happy, make me proud.
Yes.
So, it's always again, how to make Swami proud, not just mere happy. So this was one episode that I prayed to Swami, Swami, I hope, you know, this is what you want me to do. And so till today, in fact, some of my friends tell me, wow, your communication has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from what it was back then, it's not the same person that we knew. So when I meet, you know, I come to meet them after a long time, like an old boys gathering. And when I speak to them, I say, wow, hey, your whole thing has changed. I say, well, I found something which gives me much more happiness and satisfaction. So I've chosen that path. So that those are kind of impact. Even as I'm speaking now, I'm thinking, Swami, what beautiful words. Please guide me.
Amazing. So beautifully He has crafted your life when you think about it. Because speech is the essence of life actually. Shabda Brahmamai, Swami should always say. It is such an integral and vital part of our being. When our speech is pure, and Swami says that tongue is the most crucial of all the sense organs, because while the eyes can see and the ears can hear and the nose can breathe, the tongue has two properties.
Yes.
It can talk as well as taste. And that is why control of the tongue is so important.
Very true. At times, sometimes, when certain pressurizing moments come, the mind tends to go in that tension because it's following that energy.
Yes.
And at times it may just slip out. The uncommon or the uncomfortable speech might just gush out. But then again, you know, another great teaching of Swami is how Swami says, whatever you do, whatever you say, stop for 3 seconds and think.
Yes.
Yeah? And think. What are you going to do? Is it going to hurt the person? Is it going to make sense? Is it going to bring happiness? So at times, you know, that pressure to hold back the tongue can just go and lash out.
Yes.
And it's so important.
And in a moment, you could have done a damage of a lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, at times, yes, it has happened, but it's a great challenge.
Yes.
To always be conscious about that thought and that guiding principle, to always think about what Swami is saying, and that's, hey, stop. You know, that constant reminder, constant integrated awareness that Swami always says is, you just keep reminding yourself, and due to that reminder, you will know what to do next. But if you don't remind yourself, then you are lost. You will not know where to hang on.
As they say, don't react, but respond.
Respond, yes, exactly.
Every situation, you can always pause and carefully respond.
Yeah. Take a deep breath, cool down. But it's not easy as just saying it.
Yes.
It's tough. But, you know, to those out there who probably would be thinking, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, it's easy to say, yeah, you know. But personally, coming from me, yeah, I still go through those challenges daily. But what can help us is to just keep reminding.
Keep practicing. And it is very much doable.
Doable. You know, like they say in golf, you know, golf, the PGA tagline is, anything is possible.
Yes. Yeah. It might not always be easy or very convenient or immediately rewarding or anything like that.
Oh, yes. At that time, you know, I was talking, as soon as I said yes, you know, thank God Swami then, you know, guided me. I knew He had given me the power.
Yes.
To move to that path.
Yes.
But sometimes, you know, temptations.
Yes.
Or you got to hold yourself back.
You have to hold your horses.
Oh, yes. You know, the reins.
Yes, you have to hold your horses. If you are driven purely by the senses and not by the spirit, then it is not going to be dharmic. Only when we follow our soul will we be moving closer to our goal. And our goal is becoming one with the soul. As Bhagwan says, there is only one soul, the universal soul. Man is born and is given a lease of life so that he may earn this knowledge, Swami says, this knowledge of his identity with the infinite. And then Bhagwan goes on to share a definition of dharma that is very simple to understand and practice, something that every great spiritual master has said in different words. Simply put, do unto others what you wish them to do unto you. Do not do unto others what you do not wish them to do unto you. Basically, do not have a double standard. Treat all as your own self. Swami says you must respect yourself and respect others. Mankind is one community. Harm yourself and you harm all. Make a person stand erect and that act makes you stand erect. The treatment you wish others to render to you is itself the measure of your duty to them. And Bhagwan concludes that beautiful discourse on dharma in 1962 October saying, it is the responsibility of every Indian, of every person to demonstrate in their lives that dharma which confers on them peace and happiness, so that the rest of mankind may get the inspiration to follow the same path. Sir Albert Einstein said, the world is a dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it. If we do not stand up for something, we will fall down for everything. And I remember Mahatma Gandhiji, who said, the pure love of one soul can offset the hatred of millions. We have no clue what amazing difference we can make in the world with our little strides, little steps to walk on this path. Therefore, let us take this path, let us strive, let us inspire before we expire. Then we would have made the world a better place and led a very satisfied life. We will continue with Mr. Jayant's experiences in the next episode of A Matter of Conscience. And he goes on to share very revealing stories of how he practiced Swami's teachings during his college days and also in his initial corporate life, and finally how he landed up in Malaysia's Anti-Corruption Commission. There are also stories of what impact he's been able to make after Swami conferred on him this important role of working in the Malaysia's Anti-Corruption Commission. Many stories left, many lessons that he can share with us through his life experiences about following the voice of conscience. So we will continue all this, we will discuss this in the next episode of A Matter of Conscience. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us through this another lovely Thursday, as we draw the curtains on this day-long programs. We offer our gratitude to Bhagwan for this amazing opportunity to connect to his love, connect to his teachings, and live in his message, feel his presence. To share with us your feedback, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. As I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama which was staged in the Sai Granth Hall by the Sri Satya Sai Bala Gurukulam students from Matigiri, Hosur. The drama is entitled Gurur Devo Bhava. So we'll continue to listen to this. Keep listening, enjoy, and let us spend our lives adding more meaning to our lives by ruminating on His message and His love. Thank you so much. Sairam.